So I always tell people and leaders, look, you know your business really well. So in that case, they know the airline industry very, very well. What I know is I know people, and I'm very good at getting to some of the root issues. So instantly, like my thoughts go to, okay, so we have an airline stewardess who's not giving great customer service, which is making the customers mad, which is ultimately going to impact business, because if she's not marketing that brand well, maybe I'll take a different airline. But I'm more interested in figuring out the why part. I'm a why person through and through, drives some of my bosses crazy because I'm always asking more questions, but I'd want to understand the why.
I'm George Siegel, and this is the Tell Us How to Make It Better podcast. Every week, we introduce you to people who are working on real-world problems and providing actual solutions. Tell Us How to Make It Better is partnering with The Readiness Lab, the home for podcasts, webinars, and training in the field of emergency and disaster services. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me on this week's Tell Us How to Make It Better podcast. Every week, I try to introduce you to somebody who has identified a problem and is doing something to try to make it better. Well, the problem I'm sure most of us have dealt with on one level or another involves where we work and what that environment is like. Do you have a good work environment? Do you have a bad work environment? Are you constantly switching jobs? There's a lot of dynamics that are in play in the workplace that can really affect both the company and the employees. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Carrie Lynn Hodson is an HR specialist with 25 years of experience as a leader, coach, mediator, and facilitator. She's the owner and CEO of an HR consultant and coaching business entitled Inspiring Organizational Growth. And she's the author of Knowing Who You Lead, a book designed to help leaders and teams understand why issues occur and how to resolve them. Carrie Lynn, welcome.
Hi, great to be here.
Yeah, so glad to have you on. Now, I'd like to start off by asking a couple questions before we get into the reason that you're on the podcast today. The first off would be, tell us something about you that people that know you and work with you have no idea about.
Well, I live on a farm, 142 acre farm. We have beef cattle and horses. And yesterday we had to save a little 2-day old calf out of a creek.
All right. So when you're not consulting, you're farming.
You bet.
Okay. A lot of people probably don't know that. And then if you had to go out and do something fun today, other than farming, what would you do?
I would go kayaking. I love it.
Nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just did that recently. And the problem I had is I wasn't sitting up high enough. So when you're leaning, you have to be in the right position, don't you?
Yep. You do for sure. Or you're going to get pretty sore pretty quick.
Yeah. I'm just falling apart. All right. So Let's jump right into this. Tell me about the problem that you've identified and what you're doing to make it better.
Ah, what a great question. So the problem is that so many employers are facing the fact that they can't attract and retain employees. Everybody knows that. And so I am helping them identify some of the root causes and the root issues that's really behind what's happening.
Now, is the problem more on the side of the companies trying to keep these people happy, or is it the people that just aren't going to be happy, so you're bringing in bad people?
Oh, not at all. I think there's potential in every single employee that you speak to. And in fact, there's a lot of employees that you're missing out on. So that's one of the issues. But the industry has changed. The world has changed. We're not industrial-based anymore. We're people-based. And so now our leadership really has to pivot. And it's not something we're accustomed to. And people are just lacking the tools to understand how.
So how does this problem affect people's lives?
Well, from a business perspective, it's affecting the bottom line. If you don't have the people, you can't do production. You can't offer the same hours. We see companies, dramatically pulling back on the hours that they can provide. As a leader, it's pretty frustrating. Every single leader, every single business owner out there wants to be successful. And so it's really hard when you can't put your actions and your goals into life because you just don't have the people to help you do it.
Now, obviously, because of the nature of what you do, you're going to be far more positive and optimistic about the situation than somebody like me, who is a magnet for bad service and just hiring terrible people. And not in my business, but just people like for trades, things to work on in a house,
right.
Going to stores, businesses, airlines, any of that stuff. I just find an incredible degree of mediocrity these days. So it seems overwhelming. So what spin do you bring to it to take this problem? And I'll give you an example. A friend of mine recently posted something on Facebook about a horrible flight attendant experience he had on airlines. And flight attendants, they're dealing with a lot. I understand that. We want to be sympathetic to the problems. But that can really change the whole face of how people perceive an organization with the people that you deal with.
Exactly. So I always tell people and leaders, look, you know your business really well. So in that case, they know the airline industry very, very well. What I know is I know people. And I'm very good at getting to some of the root issues. So instantly, like my thoughts go to, okay, so we have an airline stewardess who's not giving great customer service, which is making the customers mad, which is ultimately going to impact business, because if she's not marketing that brand well, maybe I'll take a different airline. But I'm more interested in figuring out the why part. I'm a why person through and through, drives some of my bosses crazy because I'm always asking more questions, but I'd want to understand the why. What's going on for that employee or within your processes that have caused the level of frustration for her that she's literally in survival mode? And you know what? Survival mode, we don't have empathy for other people. We can't do the, hi, so nice to meet you. Because you know what? I'm burnt. I'm completely burnt out. And so we need to back it up. We need to slow it down and figure out what's going on. Because otherwise you can hire another airline stewardess. That's great. But if you have the same processes and the same systems, the exact same thing's going to happen.
So is it the attitude that's nurtured by the organization? Does it start from the top down? If the GM or the manager is a hypocrite and the employees look up there and they go, oh, that person doesn't know what they're doing. And then it affects how you feel about the organization and then ultimately how you do at your job.
Yes. So in my book, I broke it up into five parts. And the first part we talk about is, who are you? Because as a leader, as that business owner, we have to do some really self reflection and some honest reflection and figure out, I know that you're doing your best. I know that you're using your strengths, but let's figure out what those strengths are and how they actually impact other people. And do you know, like, you think you're being super effective by sending out that email and telling people what you need, but what's the feedback? And how do you seek that? So we got to figure out who we are and how we impact other people. And then we can get to figuring out who the people are we're actually trying to lead and how we have to adjust to that.
So what do you do if you have a staff of people that are complainers? When I was in the television news business, a lot of the editors, reporters, videographers, you know, they would all be complaining about how crummy the station was and how horrible it was and all the things they hated about it. And I would always say, why don't you go do something else? And they just didn't seem like they wanted to be there.
Right. And now they probably have gone to do something else. I mean, that's part of our labor shortage, right? It's actually, we've kind of flipped the supply and demand. And now employees really are the ones that are in demand. So they can leave if they don't like it. And that's exactly what they're doing. So part of my background is I have been a leader, supervisor, coach, facilitator for 25 years. So I have had every single one of those employees that you're talking about who's not happy. I'm also the one that admittedly was the one who was like really excited and read all the leadership books and ran the leadership courses that you went to begrudgingly and then said, yeah, this is garbage. It doesn't work. And I'm the one who's had those people with their arms crossed, you know, telling me every negative thing about their employer in the class. And I'm okay with it. I like to hear what people are saying because I want to hear what's behind it. So if they're not happy, what's behind it? And sometimes people just haven't been asked the right way or by the right person, and they may not even know. And that's the fun of it. It's like, you know, sleuthing and figuring out what's really going on.
Well, I marvel about how a lot of places are even still in business. And years ago, I was hired by a credit union to make a video featuring the fish guys at the Pike Place Market in Seattle. They had it's called the fish philosophy. And what they do is they have the attitude at the market that everybody there, it's their first time, it may be their only time, and they want them to leave with a memorable experience. And the credit union wanted people to feel that way when they walked in. I don't think a lot of people even think about that how impactful their encounter with the customer is how do we change that? Because it drives me nuts. When I walk into a business and I feel like they don't want me there, I don't want any part of it.
So it does start with the employer. And this is where employers cringe and say, really? Like, honestly, I'm so busy. I'm trying to keep this business afloat. And now you want me to change and care about each one of these employees and find out their needs and adjust my leadership style to each one. Yeah, but I'll help you do it. It's not that hard. And we can get some quick wins. So in your case, those employees that worked in that industry business, they did it because they wanted to brand their company. They wanted to market their company. They're proud of their company. So again, go to the root. I have to work with you first and make you proud to work here. I have to, as the boss, be the one who makes you feel individual the same way I want you to then make your customers feel. They're not going to do it if they don't feel that way at work. You want me to inspire on the outside, but I don't feel very inspired here. I don't feel heard. I don't feel valued. But you want me to do it for my customers. Well, I can do it for a little while and I can fake it. And then, yeah, you know what? I just don't want to do this anymore.
Well, now in the world of social media and people filming things on their, videotaping things on their cell phone, a bad experience can blow up and become major. I mean, we see these things. I see them on TikTok and Instagram of somebody in a fast food restaurant and the employee goes crazy or the customer is way out of line and the employee doesn't quite know how to handle it. So it's even more important, it seems like now, because something you do wrong can be seen by everybody, or they can post about it. They can review you online. Mm-hmm. Businesses have to be more accountable.
They do. And I mean, to that extent too, I also say, like, look, people are human. And so when I see those ridiculous videos, it's like, you know what? Again, is this how this person always displays themselves at work, or was something else going on for that person? Like, let's give them a little bit of, wiggle room. They're human too. They could be having a really bad day. You've never had a bad day. You've never cut somebody off in traffic. Well, we need to figure out why and support that person so that they remain that great employee that they probably have always been for you.
What are the biggest obstacles you face when you go in and work with people? What's the pushback you get?
It's trying to equate it to the profit line, because we've been so focused on processes. We need to get better strategies. We want to create this production. We want to, increase customer service. We want to get more customers or whatever it is. But it's slowing people down and saying, I get it, but behind every process is a human. So unless we inspire the humans, then you're not going to have a business in the end. And so I've actually created what I call a retention calculator. And I did it with my brother, who's a stonemason, owns a very high functioning, very successful business. And when he saw it, he said, I don't think I want to look at this, because it breaks it down and shows you just how expensive it is every time you lose an employee. It's not just their wages, or it's the impact on morale. It's the fact that you got to yank another person off to retrain the next person. It's the overtime you're paying. It's the lost jobs. There's a big impact. And so when I break it down and show the actual numbers, then people say, okay, show me what you got. You can fix this. I can help.
So do the problems change based on the amount of money the employee makes? So if I have a bunch of high salaried employees versus hourly employees, and I'll give you an example, because I've made films in this area, the construction industry. Mm-hmm. I think the home building industry is one of the shakiest industries I've ever been around, because you have people on the crew that don't seem to care. You have managers that are only as good as the person supervising them, and the problems they make linger for years with homeowners after they buy their homes. So versus working at maybe a radio station where salesmen are all making $75,000, $100,000, $150,000, how do the problems change from one to the other?
They don't. I mean, I've talked to the salesmen who are jumping from group to group, who are getting headhunted for new ones, and they're not loyal to the company that they're with. I've talked to employees who made well into the six figures and left that employer because they did not like what the employer stood for or how they operated, and are now working for a different industry, making less money. And you can tell it just in the way they're explaining what they do and who they work for. They're so loyal. And I said, like, you're literally branding this company to me that I've never heard of, but I want to go look them up because they must be fantastic to work for. So it's less and less about how much I make and more about, are you true to what you say you're doing? And so you brought up the construction industry, and one of the glaring errors that we're making is we don't train people. We don't train them. We say, oh, okay, we've got a project. We're hiring you Monday. Show up, have your boots and your hat. You're ready to go. Okay, here, do this. Like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I don't know how I fit into this whole perspective of like, what's my job and what's the purpose of my job and how do I fit in on this team? And does the team even know who I am? Do they even care who I am? Do I know who they are? There's no introductions. There's no training. There's no mentoring. There's no professional development. And so people get disengaged and they leave.
Well, now the argument I could hear being made from those companies and having run a small business before, if you have to pay people more and put more into them, I know you have to see the big picture here.
Yeah.
But initially, you may not have the money or want to make the commitment because somebody you're paying $10 or $12 an hour, you can't really expect loyalty. I mean, I don't know how the next opportunity for them that comes up is a better opportunity.
So there's a bunch of stuff there to unpack, right? And that's okay, because they're all valid arguments and definitely things that we have to talk about. So the first one being is I, the employer, don't have the time or the money to invest in training this person. Training doesn't necessarily cost a whole lot of money. Training can be, I want to hear about who you are, what do you know, and how have you learned it in the past? How do you like to learn? Would you prefer me to show you and describe it? Do you want to try to do it while I stand here and coach you? Like, how do you learn? Well, if I leave after a day of work and feel like, okay, I learned something and I feel better about me and the skills I'm developing, yeah, I'm interested in coming back tomorrow. If you just bark a bunch of orders at me and I didn't understand what you were saying, and then you get mad at me because I didn't understand it, it's not that the training costs you any money, but I didn't enjoy the experience.
I think it's the fear of training somebody because you know you're just training them for someone else. You're their stepping stone.
Mm-hmm. And that is that's a valid argument that a lot of employers bring up and say, you know, well, I just don't train them because they leave. And so my question is, okay, how's that working for you? Yeah. Well, not very well. They keep leaving. Okay. So are you open? Like, let's try something new. Let's just do an experiment, a social experiment. Let's just try. One of the things I do is come in and talk to your employees. Because they'll talk to me because I'm just somebody from the outside. I'm not the boss. I'm not part of the us and them. Just tell me what you think. So, I mean, the question was, you're like, why bother investing in somebody that's going to leave? Well, statistics actually show us, and there was a LinkedIn article lately and said 97% of employees will consider staying with you because of how the experience that they had with you. 97%. I did stats from my book and asked how many of you considered leaving your organization because of the supervision specifically, not the money, not the benefits, the supervisor? Over 78%. Okay, so which one do you want to gamble on? You want to take a gamble on let's just not change anything? Well, you're going to sit in the 78%, or let's shoot for that 97%. I'm not promising everybody's going to stay with you, but you know what they are going to do? They're going to brand you. They're going to market you to other people. Hey man, I'm staying, but this guy was fantastic to work for. I'm actually able to apply for this next job because he gave me the training. He took the time to mentor me. She helped me figure out what I didn't know and gave me new skills. She even offered me a course. It was fantastic. And that's the employee who, as they leave, is handing you the resumes of three people they know that would do really well here.
Interesting. You know, you talk about loyalty. I think we have horrible examples of loyalty in everything that we look at. And that would be, okay, start with politics. Mm-hmm. Both sides, loyal to their side, even when their side is wrong.
Right, right.
And you look at sports organizations where players are being paid tens of millions of dollars and have no loyalty. They'll go to the next best opportunity and they'll say, well, man, you know, we're just a commodity, even though they're making more in a year than we'll make in 10 lifetimes. Mm-hmm. So we see no true examples of loyalty. So how are we supposed to model that behavior?
I think there's many examples of true loyalty, and there are players who have turned down offers because they don't want to go to those teams and say, I love this team. In fact, I want to go back and coach this team or whatever it is, or I want to stay in this city. I think because society focuses on, you know, instant reports, and this is one of the issues that I have, you know, employers, and again, because they're stuck in that kind of survival brain, it's, I need an answer and I got to do this quickly and it's not working. And I have to slow everything down and say, okay, I get it. Tell me your concerns. I'm not going to ignore them, but I'm going to say, let's look at it from a different angle. Let's try this. Believe in me, because I'm not just saying it. I have literally done these things. I have the experience. I'm bringing it to you, and I'm bringing a different perspective. And I've talked to your employees. So I think I have literally had the employee in my office who, you know, angry and frustrated, and they're fighting with the boss and they're fighting with their coach. And afterwards, I get them all laughing. Because it's usually a case of, I don't understand who you are and you don't understand who I am. So we don't know how to gel. And so this is just completely frustrating. Okay, let me give you some insight. And then we have some fun.
You ever see that George Clooney movie? I think it was called Up in the Air, where his job was to fly around and fire people.
Definitely not a job I would want.
Did you see have you seen the movie?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, well, it's just really interesting because people getting fired from a company is can be a life altering experience.
100%.
And change everything about them. So do you have examples of companies you've gone into that you can talk about that where you've established a different culture and made a difference so people can go, wow, this is a good place. I want to stay here.
Well, you know what? I'll give you examples of when I've worked with, you know, supervisor and employee particularly, because I get down to that. Like, it's not, I work with the organization, but I'm working with the people in the organization. So I love what you just said. So if I was an employee who in the past had been fired or has had some really crappy supervision before, and, you know, been, so I'm coming in with a very jaded perspective. That's the reality. For that person, the very first thing that employer has to understand is that perspective they're coming in with. I don't trust. Trust is something earned and it's very easily lost. I might be lacking in some confidence. And so when I hear you try to give me feedback, I'm immediately triggered. And I talk about triggers in my book, because you are trying to just give me perspective, but it sounded so familiar to me and so much like what another employer has said to me, that I immediately get defensive. I start making excuses. I blame other people. And now you're frustrated because I'm not learning. But what we really needed to do was figure out, what's this all about? And then once the employer does that and approaches it a little bit differently, well, they can be your most loyal employee, because all of a sudden you're giving them a totally different perspective of leadership they've never seen before. And it works.
What do you do in situations where it seems like one of the biggest problems in companies that I've worked in is gossip, office chatter. Yes. What do you do about that?
So another example I give so that leaders can kind of say, oh yeah, that's definitely me. So you've held the meeting and you asked everybody, okay, so here's, you know, our new strategies. Here's where we're going to go moving forward. Cause everybody says they don't know what the strategic plan is and how they're going to fit in. So here's our goals. Any thoughts, any ideas? No. Nothing? Crickets? Okay, great. Everybody understands. Wonderful. See you tomorrow. And then half an hour later, everybody's madly texting each other and emailing. And I mean, it used to be around the water cooler. It can be if we're not remote anymore. Frustrated, angry. This is stupid. I don't like this idea. I don't understand where this came from. And then the gossip starts, right? Oh, well, I heard it's because of so-and-so, or, you know, this person got that promotion or whatever. And the poor leader's like, what? Like, I tried, I communicated. And then they said, there's no communication. They don't understand the us and them, what they are doing and what, and really that's what gossip is about. Gossip is, we don't have all the answers. So we just fill in stuff that we don't really know the answers to. And part of what I do is give leaders different strategies to use, because if the ones you're using aren't working very effectively, let's try it a different way. And challenge the employees as well. Like, if you're gossiping and you had this opportunity, did you even log into the meeting? Did you go to the meeting? Did you have your camera off and you were doing something else? So you weren't even listening to the responses that were given. Did you read the report where it provided all the background information? I mean, let's be fair. And then if there's questions that you wanted to ask, was it the meeting setting? Because maybe it's a meeting with 50 employees. Am I really going to speak up and ask my little question? Does my team understand our little perspective in this big strategy? Or is it kind of like a universal strategy and we have no idea? We don't even see ourselves on that list. So I don't know what the purpose of this is. It's just more work. Change priorities again. That's the gossip. That's what's behind it. And so if we change how we ask the questions, we can get some better answers and fix a lot of it.
Has remote working changed the dynamics of what you have to deal with very much?
100%. 100%. So one of my chapters is entitled "Out of Sight Should Not Equal Out of Mind." And it was very easy for leaders to default to their leadership style. So if your leadership style is, I'll give you an example. I give lots of examples in the book, but I am somebody, I'm very visionary, a big picture. I don't need minute details. I don't need a great big agenda list for the week to figure out what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. It's just not me. But people I had working for me, I was completely stressing them out because they couldn't come to my office and say, okay, so I just want to check in. Like, what are we doing now? What are we doing now? And because I'm remote, you don't know how to ask. You don't want to bug me. I'm in 8 gazillion meetings. So what I learned from them was, okay, I'm causing you this stress. The way I lead is causing you this stress. I need to have a Monday meeting and a follow-up Friday meeting, so that everybody on the team understands where we're going, what we've done, and how we're and how it's going. Even if I don't need it, it's not about me. It's about the people that I'm leading. And I mean, it was a great lesson. I share lots of lessons where it's like, okay, I screwed up here. Here's another one. Learn from me. Because I think that's part of it, right? And I don't think leaders have a lot of opportunity to do that. Are you going to share with other leaders in your organization? Not necessarily, because you don't want to look like you're not doing well. So what I'm giving you is really like, here's a lot of examples of where things we're not doing right. Here's real tangible ways that you can fix it.
We definitely need more great leaders. I mean, you know, even if it's not just in business everywhere, right?
Yeah, it seems for like sure.
There's a total lack of that. So what advice do you have for people? Throw out some advice from both the top and the bottom for the best way to solve the problem you're working on. What advice would you throw out there to say, this is what you should be focusing on?
Okay, I love it because you just answered it. So you said, how should you solve it? Stop trying to solve it. Stop. Listen. And mediation was the best training I ever took. I wish I had taken it a decade prior, because what mediation teaches you is, and I'm a college professor, and one of the courses I'm teaching right now is mediation. And I have to keep reminding them, we're not here to solve the problems. And neither are you as leaders. We're very much problem solvers, action oriented. We want to do it. Oh, two people come into your office and they're fighting. Okay, I got the solution. Okay, you're going to work there. You're going to work there. You're going to work on this. You're going to work on this. You're going to communicate this way. Okay, better. Okay, good. And a week later, they're back into your office and they're fighting. Stop trying to solve things. Listen, ask questions, get deeper. And then with them, figure out what the best options are. So that's my first piece of advice.
What's your second piece?
I have to remember what your question was. The second piece of advice, second question was what?
It was more about just, okay, looking at the problem. You're saying, okay, don't solve it. So is there something that people going to a job should think about every day, that just that mindset that maybe they should walk into that would help them be better at that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So although my book technically is written for leaders, it's also written for teams. And what I'm empowering people to do is, you need to know who you are. And you need to be able to use that language really effectively when you go to work. I don't know you as an employee. I need you to help me understand. So things like, I am a really detail-oriented person. Not me, but some people are. So I just wanted to share that I think the reason I didn't give you the report that you were looking for this week was because in the email, I didn't get the detail that I needed. I didn't understand what you were looking for. So I'm wondering if next time you could include these things, and maybe you outline it. Like, these are the things that I think I would need. Oh, wow. Sure. Yeah, I can do that. Didn't occur to me to do it, but yeah, that's great insight. And then, so you've taught me, and then you produce the product that I need. Perfect. There's lots of examples where we as employees can explain how we learn and do it proactively, so it doesn't sound defensive later on as to why you made mistakes. Although I just wrote an article on what do I do if I make a mistake. You know what? A, admit to it, and B, acknowledge what part you had in it, but then offer solutions. Here's how I can improve, or here's what I need, or whatever it is. Because we all want, quote, solutions. We want you to do well. You are expensive to hire. I want you to do well. So help me figure out how to do that.
Good answer. So how can people get your book?
So it is currently in pre-publish. It is being published at the end of August. They can follow me on LinkedIn. I'm very active there, and I'm actually including a lot of content so people can get to know me, the author, because I think that's important, right? You want to know who I am and how I think. And then when it's ready to rock at the end of August, it will be everywhere that you can get books.
Excellent. All this will be in the show notes so people can look there and find out ways to get in touch with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would love to see that philosophy that you have spread, because I'm so frustrated by bad service and bad attitudes. And, you know, there's a lot of problems out there. It's great to see somebody working on trying to fix them.
Well, the next time you see one, just think, I wonder what the root cause is. I wonder if, you know, why is this person? Because often I'll ask, how's your day going? Right? Did anybody ask you that all day long, or have they just grumbled at you because they want this and they want this and they want this? And you do it, and you will see the person's attitude change. Wow, it's been really hard. Imagine it is. It's really busy, isn't it? Yeah, thanks for asking. So what is it you needed again? Right? A little bit of kindness, a little bit of caring, a little bit of understanding.
Absolutely. Great advice. Carrie Lynn, thank you so much for coming on, and look forward to checking out the book.
Oh, I can't wait. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for listening to today's Tell Us How to Make a Better podcast. All the information about Carrie Lynn can be found in the show notes, so you can reach out and get in touch with her and buy her book when it comes out. And if you have any ideas for future programs, guests, comments, anything, I would love to hear about from you directly. The contact information is also right there in the show notes, and you can also get it on our website at tellushowtomakeitbetter.com. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.